In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal. It is Thursday, just a couple of days away now from that big game at the Emirates, Arsenal versus Bournemouth. We will talk about that a little bit later on in this show. Got plenty other things to discuss as well. But first of all, look, I hope you're all having a very good start to your day, wherever you're watching or listening to this around the world. I'm sure plenty of you, if you're watching over here in the UK like me, are pretty knackered this morning because we had some pretty brutal thunderstorms last night from about 4 a.m, certainly around the London area, which has kept me awake from then. So yeah, plenty of coffee going on this morning. But aside from that, all good. Like I said, the week's going well, despite it having no Arsenal involvement. Certainly the two Champions League semi-finals have kept me entertained anyway over the last couple of days. I'm sure it has you as well. Two really good ties. Still really, really frustrating that Arsenal weren't in it, though. So, right, plenty to discuss today. We'll talk about Gabriel Jesus, who's been in the headlines for the last 24 hours or so. We'll, like I said, look ahead to the Bournemouth game. Lots of questions from you guys as well on various topics. So let's get started. And let's start with Gabriel Jesus. Now, James McNicholas yesterday reporting in The Athletic that Arsenal could potentially be open to selling Gabriel Jesus this summer. Which is big news, obviously. I mean, this is a player who, let's not forget, when he arrived 2 years ago and burst onto the scene, was just absolutely sensational, genuinely, genuinely transformational for Arsenal. That was how big an impact he had at that time. He just looked like a world beater before that injury at the World Cup. But James reporting that Arsenal potentially could be open for offers should a decent one arrive for their forward this summer. And I had lots of people in the last 24 hours asking me about it. Kyle here has got in touch. It's, hi, Charles, love the content. What do you think about the news of possibility of Jesus leaving? Personally, I feel we are a better squad with him in, but understand the injuries are an issue. I mean, this is a classic example, isn't it, of how quickly things can change in football. And I mean, the pair of them, you know, not just talking about Jesus, Zinchenko as well, you think when they both arrived, how important they were to this new look Arsenal under Arteta and how central they were to the team. And now both of them kind of finding themselves on the fringes of things at the moment. Injuries certainly haven't helped either of them. And I think when you look at Jesus and how things have gone for him since he arrived, it's impossible not to look at that injury at the World Cup as a huge sliding doors moment for him. Like I said, before that injury, before that World Cup, he was unbelievable. He was so transformational in terms of what he brought to Arsenal, the quality he brought. Yes, there was a few. He went on that little run up to the World Cup where he didn't score. But even in those games, he was playing so, so well. And he was so integral to what Arsenal were doing. The hold-up play, the work rate, the quality, the assist, the goals at the start. Now, he was brilliant, Jesus, absolutely brilliant. But he hasn't been the same player since that injury. It's obvious that this knee issue that started with that injury at the World Cup that forced him to have the operation has been holding it back, has been hampering him. And you look at his performances this season and his record this season, 4 goals, 4 assists in the Premier League. I mean, it's not good enough. It's not the record you need from a from what you would consider your main striker, especially if you're targeting a title. And the fact that he has lost his position in the team now to Kai Havertz, and justifiably lost his position in the team to Kai Havertz, you know, raises questions about him. But I kind of agree here with Kyle in terms of I'm not at that stage where I think, oh, Arsenal should definitely be selling Jesus. I'd be kind of surprised if they did sell Jesus in the summer. Now, I'm fully expecting Eddie Nketiah to potentially go. But if you sell Nketiah and you sell Jesus in the same window, you kind of need to sign two forwards, I think, rather than just one. And I'm not sure Arsenal really need to do that. I mean, I'm not privy to Jesus's medical records. I don't know how bad this knee injury is. I don't know if it's something that can be resolved and he can get back to playing injury-free, which he hasn't been able to do for a long, long time. And maybe, you know, if Arsenal know something different and know that this injury might be something that is going to continue to plague him, that might be the root behind the reasons to potentially selling him. But if it's not and he can get back to full fitness, I still think he's got so much to give, Jesus. Maybe not as Arsenal's first choice striker. The team probably has moved on from that, just like it did when he was at Manchester City and he was unable to really claim that spot. He was still really, really important to Manchester City, still scored hugely important goals and still helped them win several trophies. And I still think he can play that role at Arsenal. When you look at the quality he's got, you look at the experience he got, you look at his age as well. Yeah, I'm just not ready to wash my hands of Jesus just yet. I have to say, I still think he's got an awful lot to give. And yes, I want a new forward to come in this summer. I think it's absolutely essential that Arsenal get a new forward. You can't be having a goal scorer who's only scoring 4 goals for you in a season in the Premier League. You need more than that. But that's not to say that Jesus can't still be a really important figure in this squad. So I think that's kind of where I am with him at the moment. I think I'm very similar to how you see it, Kyle, that I know that injuries are an issue and it's a problem, but I do feel Arsenal is a better squad of him. And I think the versatility he brings as well. You know, if Arsenal go out and buy themselves a new forward, or they decide to stick with Kai Havertz as a central striker and play him, you know, sign another wide attacker to give more options, it's brilliant. But I still think Jesus has got a part to play because he can play as a central striker. You can rotate him with Havertz. You know, if he gets himself fit, you can play him on the right-hand side. You can play him on the left-hand side. He's such a clever player that unless he's really pushing for a move, I don't know, I'm not really in the boat of let's get rid of Jesus. I just think he's still got an awful lot to give and he's still young. And if he can get back to full fitness, then there's a top, top quality player there for Arsenal. So that's where I am on it. But love to get your thoughts on it. What do you think when it comes to Gabriel Jesus? Do you think Arsenal should sell? Do you think this is a summer to sell? Look, if a really big bid comes in for Jesus, then obviously that might change my thinking a bit. You know, if someone from Saudi Arabia comes in and whacks £60 million on the table for Gabriel Jesus, then you probably think, okay, you've got to take that and look to reinvest it somewhere else. But I can't really see with his injury issues, I'd be surprised if offers like that arrive. So, but let me know, as I was saying, you know, what do you think? What sort of money do you think Arsenal should consider if they are going to sell Gabriel Jesus? Anything like that, give me your opinions in the comments below. Right, I just want to talk about Ben White. Now, this has been doing my head in. Honestly, I genuinely, it's bonkers the attention this little incident in the North London derby has got. He basically tapped Vicario's glove, and that somehow turned into, oh, he was trying to take his gloves off, which, let's face it, he wasn't trying to take his gloves off. He might have been trying to loosen it. I don't know, but it has got so much attention. And like yesterday, Postecoglou was being asked about it in the press conference, and I thought his answer was pretty good, to be fair. He's like, look, I don't care. I don't really care. It's not a big deal. And it's exactly that. It's not a big deal. It's just something that happens. He's tapped for a millisecond. He's tapped a goalkeeper on the glove. How is that bigger? Like, honestly, in the last couple of weeks, and I'm just using Arsenal for an example here, you've had a horrendous tackle on Kai Havertz by Kilman go unpunished. Horrendous tackle on Tomiyasu from Jackson go unpunished. And there's not been a mention of it anywhere that these potentially leg-breaking tackles are just going through and not getting, and players aren't getting punished for it. Someone's going to get seriously hurt if these tackles are allowed to continue. And yet there's no mention of it. But Ben White touching someone on the hand for a millisecond has literally not stopped being talked about or focused on since the North London Derby on Sunday. It's mad. I mean, Tottenham have even asked the PGMOL on the rules about obstructing goalkeepers. Postecoglou, again, in his press conference yesterday, said, "You're allowed to reach out to them, the PGMOL. They're not a hidden society. I'm sure all the clubs do it. We see clarification in case certain things have changed. You never know. We just wanted some clarity on what the actual position is on interference on the goalkeeper. I'm ancient, mate, but I always thought the goalkeeper was a bit of a protected species. Maybe that's shifted now and I've missed the memo." He was then asked if he had received any clarity from PGMOL, and he said, "Not really." I mean, it's mad. You just look at what goes on in the penalty area for every single set piece. Players being thrown around, grabbed around the throat, held by the sleeves, and yet Ben White literally touching someone on the glove is getting this spotlight. You watch what Vicario does when he came up in the last minute when Spurs had a corner and Vicario came into the box when they were trying to get an equaliser. Look what he did. He went straight to David Raya, stood in front of him and started pushing him around. And there's no mention of anything like that. It's so mad to me. I just find it so bonkers that the attention this has got. There's far more important things that should be being focused on right now than what Ben White is doing. I just think it's mad, honestly. I really, really do. But yeah, I just felt like I had to have my say on that because it's been really winding me up this morning looking at all the reaction to it. Before I move on to the Bournemouth game, just ahead of that match, I mean, just horrendous, horrendous tragic news in England over the last couple of days with the sword attack in London and 14-year-old Daniel losing his life in such a tragic and horrible, horrible way. And it's, you know, there's been lots of reporting on Daniel since the incident, since his death. And it's come out that he's an Arsenal fan, he's a big Arsenal fan, football mad, you know, really nice young kid. And there is a big sort of groundswell of sort of, you know, there's a movement on social media at the moment ahead of the game against Bournemouth to try and get a sort of standing ovation at the Emirates in memory of Daniel. If you haven't seen it yet, that's what's going here. There's a tweet on the screen here just from one account who is spreading the word about it. For a round of applause in the 14th minute of the game. Obviously, Daniel was 14, so that's where the 14th minutes come from. So if you are going to the game on Saturday and you sort of see what's going on and you join in, I think it's a really nice thing for Daniel. And, you know, I can't even think what his family are going through right now. It's just such a horrible, horrible thing. So anything that could give the family some sort of, not relief, that's probably the wrong word, but just something to, you know, lift their spirits in any sort of way at the moment would be a nice thing. And obviously 60,000 people paying their respects to Daniel on Saturday morning Saturday afternoon would be a really, really good thing. So yeah, if you're going to the game on Sunday, please do join in on this applause for a young man whose life has just been taken away in such a horrible, horrible fashion. Far too, far too young.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Okay, so ahead of that Bournemouth game, then we'll look at some of the options facing Mikel Arteta. The players were in training yesterday. If you've seen some of the pictures on screen here on YouTube from yesterday's training session, Jurrien Timber, of course, heavily involved. Looks like he might well be in the squad for the first time since that injury on the opening day against Nottingham Forest. As I went through yesterday in my discussion, I don't really think there's too much for Mikel to think about in this game in terms of what he's going to do with his starting 11. Uncle Chris has got in touch here. Says, "Hey Charles, great content as always. The only change I'd make to the first 11 will be to bring in Zinny for Tomiyasu, because if Bournemouth play with a low block, as I suspect they will, we'll need an extra technical player to help pick the locks," which is an interesting one. I can certainly see the argument for it. Like you said, you know, I think we all know kind of how the game's going to pan out against Bournemouth. They will look to attack. They will look to counter-attack. You look at the players they've got, the form they're in. Justin Kluivert's playing very, very well at the moment. He's got a lot of pace, and I think they'll look to use the likes of him to get out quickly and try and catch Arsenal on the counter. But on the whole, they will probably sit pretty, pretty deep, and Arsenal are going to have to work out how to break them down. And maybe Tomiyasu coming out of the team and Zinchenko coming into the team will allow them to do that. But again, they've got some threat out wide, and maybe Arsenal will want to stick with Tomiyasu. I just think he'll stick with Tomiyasu, to be honest. I don't think we're going to see too many changes for Arsenal between now and the end of the season, barring any injuries. But certainly Zinchenko for Tommy could potentially be one. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does with Yurian Timber as well. I think there's another question from one of you guys a little bit later on in the show that will talk about Timber and the decision facing Mikel Arteta. There's a question here from one Manic who says, given TP5 of Thomas Partey's injury record, it'd be very hard to offer him a new contract. This is in response to what we were talking about yesterday with Arsenal's midfield plans with Jorginho about signing a new contract, and we discussed Thomas Partey. So the two options, according to one Manvik, is one, sell him; two, let him play this year. If he stays fit, then you can make a decision if you want to extend his deal at the end of the current deal. I know it's a risk to let him leave for free, but his injury record has been very poor. Would love a new midfielder, but want to know what will be done with ESR, Vieira, Sambi. Hate that we couldn't use ESR and Vieira much this year when they were fit. Yeah, the Thomas one's an interesting one. I think my view on what Arsenal should do with Thomas Partey for next season is I'd keep him. And I wouldn't offer him a new deal yet. I'd keep him and see how next season goes. If someone from Saudi Arabia whacks a load of money on the table for Thomas Partey this summer, then Arsenal are going to have to accept it, I think. It's just business sense that they will probably have to accept it. But if that doesn't happen, and it's highly likely that it won't because it didn't happen last season, obviously Thomas hadn't played much this season. So I think you keep him and try and use him next season and do all you can to keep him as fit as possible, because look, Thomas Partey is such a fantastic footballer that if he's fit and he's available, then he's going to make you a hell of a lot stronger than you are when you're without him. So, and we've seen just in the last couple of games what sort of impact he can have when he's in the team. So my view on Thomas is I think definitely keep him for the remainder of his contract. Don't give him a new deal yet. Keep him for another year. See how what his availability is like. See what his performances are like. And then maybe consider your options as he comes to the end of his current deal. But yeah, I'd be keeping Thomas, I think, barring a really big offer comes in for him, because I still think he's just got so much more to give. Aaron here says, hi, Charles. I want to hear your opinion and others on signing a striker this summer. Splashing big money on a top-class striker, Gyökeres Osimhen, versus investing for the future, Sesko, and put the money more on a potential winger and midfield signings, as new winger and midfielder won't come cheap either. Havertz obviously performed brilliantly this season. Jesus is still an Arsenal player, so shall we trust them more, or should we be more ruthless in the striker recruiting department? See, as I was kind of discussing when it came to Jesus, I'm just not I'm not convinced what Arsenal need to be the best, to make themselves even better next season, is a new out-and-out striker. What I'm seeing from Havertz at the moment and what he's offering is making me think that that is potentially an option that Arsenal can go down. I think Arsenal need another attacker. They need another significant goal threat. But whether that's an out-and-out central striker, I'm not 100%, because I look at how many goals Arsenal scored this season. I look at how many goals Arsenal scored last season. It's an awful, awful amount. So if you can still get a player who can play as a forward or out wide, I think that's just equally as important as just going out and splashing on a number nine, because I think what we're seeing from Kai Havertz and the development he's making playing in that role, and how good Arsenal look with him playing in that role, it's potentially going to solve Arsenal a problem in the transfer market. But we'll have to wait and see. In terms of would I spend big money on an out and out number nine, I certainly wouldn't spend the sort of money I think it was going to cost to sign someone like Osimhen. I think you'd split that money, like you said, if there's a lot of priorities. Arsenal need another winger. They absolutely need another winger. It's essential. They've needed one for a long, long time. They need someone they need to add some real pace to this team, I think, or pace to this squad, to give them that option to stretch teams when it's needed. So I think that has to be a priority. I think a midfielder has to be a priority as well. Definitely a forward, but whether that's an out-and-out number nine, I'm still on the fence a little bit. But let me know your thoughts in the comments below and how you view about that. Here's one from Jordan. He says, hi, Charles. Great show as always. Not the biggest thing, but genuinely curious who will drop out of the matchday squad if Timber is in it versus Bournemouth. Since everyone else is fit, seems like Reece has dropped out. So I wonder who else will make way and whether that might tell us something about Mikel's plans for the summer transfer window. It's a really interesting point. The fact that Arsenal have got so many players fit and available at the moment, they are having to leave players out. Like you said, Reece Nelson was left out. The substitutes against Spurs were Ramsdale, obviously, as a goalkeeper. Then you had Kivior, Martinelli, Jesus, Smith-Rowe, Nketiah, Jorginho, Vieira and Zinchenko. So if you add Timber into that mix, one of those players is going to miss out. You kind of look at who that could potentially be. You know, you'd keep Kivior on the bench because you need that defensive option. You'd probably keep Zinchenko on the bench. Jorginho would certainly stay on the bench. Jesus would. Martinelli would. So you're looking at Vieira, Smith-Rowe, and Nketiah. I think you'd probably keep Nketiah on the bench. Or maybe Nketiah might, because you've got Jesus on there and you've got Havertz playing as a central striker. So it's an interesting one. And it might well show us a little bit in terms of what Mikel's thinking for the summer as well. But I don't think that's going to be at the forefront of his mind, to be honest. I think he's just going to be delighted to have Timber back and available. But I think what it does show again is just the incredible sort of way that this squad at the moment, given all the demands this season, how everyone is fit at the business end of the season, it is pretty mad. But yeah, in terms of who might drop out, I'd probably say Smith Rowe or Nketiah. Maybe it'd be the two most favourite choices for that in my mind. And then here's one from Dennis to round things off. He said, I was thinking about the run-in for City and Arsenal and a what-if scenario happened in that both Arsenal and City win our games up until the City-Spurs game. Then Spurs manage a win against City, which took it to the final day. Do you think if it came down to the final game and a win for Arsenal would get us a title, that this team would or wouldn't crumble under the pressure? I feel that this team has improved a lot since last year in all departments, but I still have a bit of doubt when we managed to lead the table and dealing with that pressure. From Dennis. Well, look, put it this way, Dennis. If Arsenal go into that final day of the season knowing that a win will give them the title and they don't beat Everton at home, then they don't deserve to win the title. If you get an opportunity like that to win the Premier League, you absolutely have to take it. Do I think they'll crumble under the pressure? Honestly, no, I don't. I think this squad has got it. You look at what they've done recently, look at the way they've bounced back from their disappointing results. You look at the way they've gone to just Spurs at the weekend under huge amounts of pressure, a really difficult game, knowing that anything but a win in your title chances are basically gone and they've gone and get the result. So I don't think they'll crumble under the pressure, and I would massively hope that they don't crumble under the pressure, because if they did, I don't think Arsenal would ever be able to live it down. I think it'd be something that'd be thrown at them forever that they mucked up on the final day. Obviously, it's football, so you'd never know. You couldn't say anything for sure, but this team has got something about them. You know, I think they've got the mental ability to be able to deal with that. And like I said, if they don't and they would miss an opportunity like that, then they wouldn't deserve to win the title in the first place. So, but thank you very much for getting in touch, Dennis, and everyone else who got in touch. Inside Arsenal Extra Time with James Benz, that is a little bit later on today. Again, I always forget to flag this at the start of the video. So anyone who is still watching at this late stage of the video, if you want to get involved in Inside Arsenal Extra Time, you've got a question for myself or James, then please do, as always, start in the comments below with the words extra time and then your question, your comment, your opinion, and we'll include that in the show a little bit later on today. So keep your eyes peeled. That'll be going live probably about 5 o'clock or so later on today. Until then, everyone, have a fantastic day. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast anbefaler.
Mit navn er Anders Morgenthaler. Over for mig sidder
Roald Bergmann.
Vi har lavet en ny podcast, der hedder Dopaminklubben.
Og Dopaminklubben er en klub, hvor ADHD er fucking sjovt, og for det griner. Det behøver ikke at være super alvorligt.
Vi er skide trætte af alle de der podcasts, der forklarer mig og nederen der. Vi gør grin med vores ADHD. Mulig ADHD.
Ja, vi udreder mig, fordi nogen siger, at jeg har det. Jeg ved det ikke rigtigt, det finder vi ud af.
Vi har i hvert fald lavet vedmål. Ind og lyt til Dopaminklubben. Hver uge udkommer vi. Der laver vi sjov og spas med at have den her vidunderlige dopaminmangel.